You're listening to a podcast of The Source on wordradio.com.
That there are policies that go along with those biases that should deeply concern us. And that is the conversation we want to engage with our first guest on today's program as well. This is Stephanie Renee welcoming you back to today's TGIF edition of The Source. And joining us now on the line as a preview of the conversation she will engage right here in Philadelphia at Eastern State Penitentiary on February 6th. Is Lauren Brooke Eisen, otherwise known as LB, with the NYU School of Law. Good morning, LB, and welcome to Word.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm thrilled to join you.
Well, listen, when we're talking about your new book, which is titled Inside Private Prisons, An American Dilemma in the Age of Mass Incarceration, this is a subject that is very near and dear to many people in our listening audience because of loved ones who have been caught up in the system, because of Ava DuVernay's expert film, 13th, in talking about the way that incarceration has become such a policy issue and historically the role that it has played in our society. So the fact that you are, digging even deeper into this subject and offering people a chance to read and digest and discuss with you is a real necessary bit of information.
Well, thank you. And, you know, this book focuses on the history of mass incarceration in this country, but then also takes a deep dive into the intersection of profit and incarceration, and specifically the emergence and growth of the private prison industry in America and how it came to be so entrenched in American corrections today. And it ultimately asks questions about, you know, what it means for the United States to rely on corporations to operate, manage, and own jails, prisons, and immigration detention centers? Is it legal to delegate such a core government duty? Is it moral to do so? And perhaps the most important question is how we got to the point where such an important public policy is delegated to major corporations.
And, you know, and the ripples and echoes of this are what, deeply trouble and concern many people who we speak to on a regular basis here through our work at the station, because there is the idea of capitalism is God in America seems to be best reflected, not necessarily in retail, but in something like this, private prisons that are run to be for-profit corporations using people's lives and, you know, some would say their transgressions or perhaps a lot of trumped up charges in order to keep beds filled so that profit can be made.
Well, the book explores not only these corporations that we just talked about, corporations like CoreCivic, NGO Group. You know, these two companies themselves earned about $4.5 billion in 2016 alone in revenue. But the book also explores all of the different corporations that make money off of incarceration. So it's deeper than just these private prison corporations that manage jails and prisons. You know, there are companies like JPay that make profit off of video conferencing and families sending money to loved ones behind bars. You know, there are companies that make uniforms. There are companies that make utensils. In New York State right now, there's a lot of controversy because the state is no longer allowing care packages to be sent to individuals behind bars in a lot of New York prisons. And this is benefiting the specific corporations that are on the list that already provide, packages and food to incarcerated people. So when we talk about profit and incarceration, we need to look deep and we need to look at all of the thousands of companies out there that are profiting off of incarceration.
And from a purely business standpoint, one of the things that has always troubled me as I speak to government officials and we sort of talk about the way things work here in America is that we are, our entire financial system is looking at ways that we can constantly grow. At some point, it's an unrealistic expectation to think that we are going to be able to create new industries, or we're going to be able to dominate industries in such a way where everything is going to be able to yield a profit. That's just not the way things happen. That's why we had the end of the Industrial Revolution in some ways, and we moved to an information society. We've transformed the way that we make money. Why is it that all of the systems related to private prisons and what sustains the prison system in America is seen as such ripe, you know, territory for people to make profit in their businesses?
Well, I think, you know, the web of complex economic incentives, from prison telephone charges to architectural fees to correctional unions to private prisons, runs deep. And, you know, in the book I write about the prison industrial complex that relies on this vast infrastructure of financial incentives that create a significant hurdle to dismantling mass incarceration. And that's a lot of what this book explores. But when we talk about incentives in the system, you know, the book also looks at unions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the power of unions when we're trying to de-incarcerate. And a really good example of that is that current Governor Cuomo, he closed over a dozen prisons in New York, mostly in upstate New York. And there are no private prisons in New York. And ironically, you know, the thorn in his side were the correctional unions in New York, because they were worried about losing jobs. And
right.
they never did. Governor Cuomo was actually able to downsize prisons and close prisons without cutting a lot of the correctional staff. And, you know, part of that reason is because prisons tend to be understaffed anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at mass incarceration, when we look at, you know, right now there's bipartisan consensus from conservatives, from progressives, that we really incarcerate too many people in this country for too long. We have 2.2 million people behind bars. I know you and a lot of your viewers are very much aware that in the U.S. we have 5% of the world's population.
Yes.
A staggering 25% of the world's incarcerated population.
Which is shameful. Yeah.
The world's largest incarcerator. So as we start to have these very serious conversations about how to send less people to jail, less people to prison in the first place, and how to keep them there for very, you know, much shorter periods of time, we need to have conversations about profit, and we need to have conversations about the other incentives that perpetuate mass incarceration, which include interest groups like unions.
Right. And you know, and one of the things that I think is...
I'd say correctional unions.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you know, the word union here in Philadelphia has all kinds of weighty connotations.
Exactly.
and we not discounting correctional unions. It is a widespread conversation that we engage here. But I also recently saw a documentary, and I don't know, every time I try to speak about it, the name of it escapes me. But some of the things that you are speaking about in terms of the profit incentive and how these things are intertwined, it talked about a maximum security prison in Sweden, I believe it was, either Sweden or Norway, where they actually, rather than having, prisoners involved in this super minimum wage creation of things like widgets and what have you, they learn how to be culinary artists. They learn how to record their own music. And they talked a lot about this idea of being able to transition back out. Basically, we don't want to see you anymore. That as far as they're concerned, you committing a crime and having to go to jail is the punishment. The punishment should not continue the entire time that you are incarcerated and for the rest of your life. And that seems to be the mentality that we have here, because these for-profit incentives that we're speaking about also translate back. Even after people have been released from a formal facility, these, you know, for-profit kinds of incentives and the companies that are involved with them follow these people for years afterwards, unless they are able to successfully expunge and what have you.
Those are excellent points. And, you know, in the U.S., our recidivism rates are staggeringly high. About 3/4 of people who are released from prison in the U.S. return within 3 years.
Yeah.
And those are terrible recidivism rates. And that's pretty illustrative of the lack of rehabilitation, the lack of programming, the lack of job transition and reentry services that is happening in prisons in the U.S. And, you know, we have the Second Chance Act. There's, you know, justice reinvestment. There is money being sent to states and, you know, faith groups working on reentry. And a lot of states have started to lead the way and really focus on improving programming in prisons and looking at recidivism rates. But you're absolutely right. When we talk about private prisons, you know, the central premise for states and the federal government, to some extent, to contract with private prison corporations is that they will save taxpayer dollars. But to save this money and turn a profit, these companies are forced to cut costs and find efficiencies that government officials, you know, hamstrung by stringent procurement laws and union contracts, can't. So we've never created the proper incentives for private prison operators, and we've never asked them to beat the government's lousy recidivism rate. And my book makes the suggestion and the recommendations that we finally hold these corporations' feet to the fire. And, you know, there are a lot of government prisons that are, you know, where the conditions of confinement are inhumane and where there's sexual assault and, you know, they're very unsafe facilities. And there are a lot of, you know, private prisons that suffer from the same problems and challenges. But we really need to contract with these private prisons and sort of tear up today's contracts and rewrite the contracts and change the incentive structure. We need to ask these private prison corporations to beat the government's lousy recidivism rate, to improve the programming that they offer, to track their recidivism rates, which is not happening in a lot of private prisons today. You know, and all of that is said knowing that a lot of government prisons are not well run. But we need to start somewhere, and we really need to hold these corporations' feet to the fire in a way, you know, 4 decades later after private prisons emerged in the mid-1980s, we've never done.
It is a necessary conversation. So in your appearance here in Philadelphia in just a few weeks, February 6th at Eastern State Penitentiary, will you be presenting, or will it be more of a back and forth exchange with the audience that will be gathered that day?
I will be presenting and reading from the book. I interviewed a lot of incarcerated individuals and formerly incarcerated individuals for my research, so I'll read some of those passages. But I always enjoy more of a conversation and a back and forth and questions. So I hope that some of your listeners attend, and I would look forward to questions and audience participation.
Wonderful. And will you be bringing copies of the book and signing them that evening?
Yes, I will be more than happy to sign copies of the book.
Excellent. Well, we are so thankful that I know you've been really busy with this book tour and crisscrossing the country. We're glad that we were able to find a good day to bring you on as a preview of that conversation that will take place right here in Philadelphia on February 6th, and look forward to hearing more from you as this very serious and necessary topic gets the kind of attention and discussion that it needs. LB Eisen, thank you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And again, ladies and gentlemen, the title of the book is Inside Private Prisons, An American Dilemma in the Age of Mass Incarceration. She is LB Eisen, and she will be presenting some of the findings of her book right here in Philadelphia on February 6th at Eastern State Penitentiary. We hope that you will pack the crowd. You will ask good questions. You will pick up a copy of this book for your personal library, and we can all have a very scholarly discussion of the real world consequences of the profit-driven incentives and the system that protects it for private prisons in America.
You've been listening to a podcast of The Source, weekdays when there's no counsel from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. right here on wordradio.com.